Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Rebecca Roche. She is senior lecturer in philosophy at Royal Holloway University, London, and we're talking about her new book, For F's Sake, Why Swearing is Shocking, Rude, and Fun. Rebecca, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
I'm very happy to be here. Hi.
I have to say this book has got the greatest final sentence in any book I've interviewed in my decades of interviewing people.
Can't remember the final sentence.
Oh, well, I don't know if I can read it. I have the book here. I'm not sure okay. I can. It says, you know, embrace your superpower, friends. Use it wisely. Just don't pull on your underpants over your tights, superhero style. You'll look like an effing knob.
I remember now, yeah.
Okay, great. How did you first start getting interested in the sociology and the sort of philosophy of swearing? It's a fascinating topic.
Yeah, it was through thinking about how asterisks work. So, I write about this in the book, but, when you see in print the F word, say, and it will be, you'll see the F and then the rest of the word will be with the letters replaced by asterisks, which I called sanitizing in the book. Just getting to think about how that works, because it's almost like when we use that sort of censorship, we are both trying to communicate the word and trying not to communicate. So there's enough of the word left intact that you know what word it is, but nevertheless, it's not all written out. So yeah, I got to thinking about how does this work? It just seems like it shouldn't work. So I started looking at what other philosophers had written about it and found nobody had, really. So I became that person.
Talking about the asterisk, which in the usage of it, which comes at the end of your book, I mean, you make the point. I mean, nobody's fooled. I mean, if you use, like, as in the title of your book, at least here, F asterisk CK, everybody knows what the word is. They're saying the word in their head. So what are we doing?
Yeah.
What is actually being accomplished that we just don't have it in print?
Yeah, well, I think this brings out where swearing gets its power from, really. Sorry, I'm just having to, sorry for the crackling, I'm moving a carrier bag away from one of my cats who likes to eat the plastic. So if we consider where swear words get their power to shock and offend us. And there have been various attempts to try and answer this over the years, where people have pointed to, for example, their taboo references. So, sort of swear words tend to focus around like lavatorial topics or sex or blasphemy, this sort of thing. Or could it be the sound of the swear word? There's a few things. But I think actually what makes... I'm coming around to the answer to this question, but what makes swearing shocking in situations where it is shocking is, I think, not really anything integral to the words themselves. It's what we signal by our choice to use a swear word.
Right.
In a formal context, in the sort of context where we're not supposed to be swearing. And I think what we signal to the people around us is a lack of respect and a lack of consideration, because we're basically signaling, I know this is a context where you're not expecting me to swear and where you won't like me to swear, but I'm going to go ahead and swear anyway. And then the people who are around us reasonably take us to, be quite disrespectful to them. So I think that's what happens when we are shocked by swearing.
So
I think when we...
Go ahead. No, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think when we replace letters in swear words with asterisks, you have a kind of competing message. So there's that message of sort of, I don't respect you very much. But by replacing some of the letters with asterisks, we kind of express that we are trying to consider people's feelings. There's this sort of sense of, I'm trying to convey the facts here, the information that you need, but I don't want to offend you, so I'm going to sort of hide it a little bit. And I think that's enough to just sort of offset that, that disrespectful message. Interestingly, it's asterisks and, sanitization in general, like, bleeping out a spoken swear word, That technique only works when swearing is used sparingly. So, you know, if it's just a sort of one-off and you sanitize the word, then there's this signal of, oh, I wish I could avoid using this word completely, but I can't, so here is a sort of censored version. But, you know, if it was a context where we were sort of, every other word was a swear word and it was all sanitized, then I think it wouldn't have that same effect of mitigating the offensive power, because, you know, then it wouldn't be sending a message that I care about your feelings, I'm going to try not to swear. So, yeah, it's a sort of, this question, how do asterisks work? I think you kind of have to step back from the words and look at what else is going on when we communicate.
But by doing that, there are all sorts of weird rules. Like, there's a good example in your book. When I think it was Prince Philip swore, he dropped the F-bomb. I guess there was a hot mic, and he was recorded or heard swearing, really, obviously not happy. And then the press had to make a decision about how they were going to cover that, whether they were just not going to mention the swear that he dropped, whether they were going to use one or two or three asterisks. Talk about that, because that was weird. It seems like everybody has different rules, even within one culture.
I mean, the examples of, and Prince Philip was famous for, you know, saying inappropriate things, of course, but it's interesting, you know, sort of British royalty swearing, for some reason, is just itself newsworthy. Even when it's Prince Philip and you kind of know that this is his style, or was his style. But I think it's this weird thing where the fact that a royal is swearing is itself newsworthy, but also the people who are interested in it are not necessarily interested in encountering the words uncensored. So it's almost like this situation where people kind of love to be outraged. I did come across, I mentioned this in the book too, but I came across a news story somewhere where it had been reported that in the sort of decades ago, Prince Philip swore at the Queen using unknown words. So it wasn't even, this is what he said. It was just, it's come to light that sort of 40 years ago, Prince Philip said a swear word to the Queen. And that was the whole story. You know, that was the point. So it's kind of like this fascination that people seem to have with, you know, especially sort of models of decorum swearing, because, you know, technically the royals are supposed to be that. So your question of sort of, There have been different standards and expectations around censorship, even within a single culture. I think if various publications have different rules. You know, some news outlets are more relaxed about swearing than others. Some will sort of print the words in full, as long as it's a quotation, usually.
Well, that's if it's a quotation, it's more allowable.
So the British newspaper The Guardian has this policy where they won't censor, that they won't sanitize, so they won't use asterisks, but they, you know, they take the view that probably you're only going to be using these words in when you're reporting what somebody's said, so, you know, not just kind of throwing it in an obituary or something like that. And I think that the differences between rules of different news outlets and, you know, other contexts where we might need to utter or report swear words. One way to think about that is just in terms of the different norms that we have when we move from context to context. So, you know, if you are, if you go to a sort of a restaurant, say, then you will sort of take, you'll read the room, you know, sort of work out how loudly am I allowed to speak in here, how well behaved do I have to be, and so on. And you'll just sort of take a measure of what the norms are around you and try to conform with that. And then you might sort of finish your meal, go next door to a bar, say, and there might be a different set of norms. And we're quite good at moving between these different sort of social contexts and just sort of getting a sense of what norms probably apply. And I think that, you know, something similar is going on. One news outlet will have a relaxed attitude to reporting swearing, and another one will be a bit more uptight about it. But really, it's an extension of the, you know, the different sets of norms place between contexts in a single culture and, you know, in a single street sometimes.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Rebecca Roche. She's senior lecturer in philosophy at the Royal Holloway University in London, and we're talking about her new book, For F's Sake, Why Swearing is Shocking, Rude, and Fun. I know that in British television, I don't know how it is here in American television, they've created these rules like, you know, two F's are okay, but three aren't in a show. That yeah. You can say a certain amount of words, but if you say one more of that same word, you'll be fined or punished or whatever. And that, when you start quoting things like that, it all seems so arbitrary and bizarre.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, this has been a criticism that's leveled at regulators. So there's Ofcom in the UK, a sort of broadcasting regulator that has the power to fine broadcasters who break the rules. So, yeah, you don't have that in the US. You have the
FCC.
Yeah. Which...
And they're very very conservative about things like that.
Yeah, yeah, and they're all. I mean, all these organisations are quite reactive, so they will. Their rules will be based on what people say offends them. So it will sort of be reacting and reflecting public attitudes rather than, you know, proactively thinking, okay, we need more of this word in primetime TV or whatever it might be.
Well, don't worry about it. The other thing I learned from your book is that
the arbitrariness.
Yeah, the arbitrariness. Well, and punishing swearing, first of all, that's weird too. I learned in your book that here in Massachusetts, where I'm talking, in Middleborough, Massachusetts, there's an anti-swearing law that you can get $20 fine for swearing in public. Who the hell is going to turn in somebody for saying a swear? And how do you define a swear? I mean, it seems like the definitions of what is a punishable swear within the last 30 years has changed.
Yeah, and it's, yes, so you have to be very careful what you say to me, I guess. But it's interesting. It's I'm speaking to, so, you know, I haven't spoken to any lawmakers in Massachusetts specifically, unfortunately, but speaking to a British policeman about this sort of topic, the impression he gave me was that sometimes swearing will be taken as a proxy for antisocial behaviour.
Right.
So,
right.
So that hopefully means that, you know, if you are just sort of calmly sitting in a public space talking sort of fairly quietly to somebody and you utter a swear word and a police officer happens to be passing, then hopefully you are not going to get an on-the-spot fine. but you know, I guess it might be something. It might be a law that's put in place to as a tool for lawmakers to sorry, not lawmakers, but law enforcement to sort of have a way to react to antisocial behaviour. So perhaps, I mean, I'm really sort of guessing here, but perhaps the thought is that if you have somebody who's behaving, you know, in a sort of disturbing the peace type way, because we have sort of disturbing the peace legislation in lots of different jurisdictions, but if you have somebody who is behaving that way, then the fact that they're swearing gives you something concrete to refer to. You know, they did this, so we gave them a fine. Whereas, you know, a lot of, you know, antisocial behaviour can be the sort of, you know, you have to be there sort of thing. Like, this person said this thing, but it was the way they said it.
Right,
you know,
right,
body
right.
Language. So it's all sort of quite subjective. So so possibly this focus on swearing in, you know, the Massachusetts case is like, here's something that we can, you know, we can use this law to justify an arrest, say, if we need to make one. Which itself raises a whole lot of questions about, you know, well, what is the link between swearing and antisocial behaviour, and how do we know, like, how do we know the difference between somebody who's swearing in a threatening way and someone
right.
who's just letting off steam or whatever it might be?
Well, you know, as you mentioned many times in your book, the context is everything, because, you know, you drop a heavy weight on your foot, you're going to let out with some expletives. So that's one context. But if you're sitting in a bar and you start screaming at the person next to you, expletive, and your demeanor seems like it's going to be antisocial, like it's prelude to a bar brawl or something like that, then that becomes an offensive swear.
Yeah, and we're quite good at making these, or we like to think we're quite good at making these intuitive judgments about the sort of swearing we need to worry about and the sort of swearing that is pretty benign. But I think, you know, a worry here is that there's a lot of research in psychology, not necessarily on swearing, but on how aggression is perceived in different people, and specifically in people of different ethnicities. And there is evidence that people tend to view, say, black men as larger and more threatening than similar-sized and similar-behaving white men.
Right.
So, you know, drawing on this sort of evidence, the worry is then that, you know, if we sort of make these gut-feeling judgments that go along the lines of, this person swearing in a way that I actually find quite threatening, then it could be that we are, you know, there's various biases piggybacking on that, that perhaps we're more likely to judge swearing by certain groups of people as more sort of dangerous and more of a serious matter than people from other groups. And that's really worrying. You know, that would mean that some people in society pay a higher price for not watching their language than other people, which is obviously unjust.
And well, that brings up the point that you make, that swearing can be a privilege. Therefore, certain people can get away with swearing and other people can't.
Well, this is a chapter toward the end of the book where I talk about this. But, you know, sort of after focusing throughout most of the book on the ethical questions around swearing are sort of along the lines of, when are we doing something wrong
right. When
we swear? And, you know, is it okay if we offend people in these sorts of situations? And, you know, throughout I sort of noticed, well, actually sort of taking for granted the fact that if we swear in a polite context, we are quite likely to offend people. And there was a blog post I came across by a disabled blogger called Mel Baggs that led me to question this, because they were saying that, so this was a person who used a wheelchair and they used voice software to speak. And they'd written about how some people invaded their space and invaded the space of disabled people generally. And as a response to this, they created a page on their voice machine to, it was devoted to various expressions that are sort of basically back off, give me some space.
Right.
And there were sort of various degrees of forcefulness, you know, sort of from fairly polite to, you know, an expression involving the F word. And this was, you know, designed just to sort of assert boundaries, right, and sort of make people back off if they were getting too close. But then Baggs wrote about how when they did use expression using the F word, people would find it funny. So, you know, the thought was, oh, God, look, this person's cursing at you using a machine, which was not the effect that they were going for. They wanted to sort of cause shock, really, and for that to, you know, cause whoever it was to back off. So the concern was here that, you know, sort of if you are, if you're not disabled, then you can take for granted that you can swear and people will, you know, stop and feel shocked and feel offended and whatever else it is that we do when people swear inappropriately. But if you're not a member of that group, then you have difficulty causing those reactions, which is actually an injustice. And I think it really signals something about our attitudes to certain groups of people. You know, I got sort of wondering, well, why is it that that disabled people can find it more difficult to shock when they swear? I think it's not just disabled people. It can be, you know, people who are whose first language is something other than the language that we're speaking.
Right.
It can be people that look a little different. And I think it is it's a judgment, I think. I mean, this hasn't been empirically investigated as far as I know, but I think it is a judgment about, you know, who is one of us. So it's a sort of, this person's in my in-group, I'm going to be offended if they swear at me. And then there's some sort of outsiders that we sort of think of as, I don't really, you know, I don't really care what they say, which I think is really worrying. I mean, there's some times when that is appropriate. So if you get a toddler swearing, often we'll think that's quite funny, right? And if somebody were to, if we were with somebody who got really offended by a two-year-old swearing at them, then we might say, you know, it's only a kid, calm down. Yeah, we think that that was inappropriate. But there's other cases where it's not inappropriate, you know, where if we don't take offence at, you know, language that would be offensive coming from somebody from a different group, then I think that's a little alarm bell that maybe there's something wrong with our attitudes to people from the group, that people from the sort of group that the person swearing at us belongs to.
You have a really great chapter in this book, among many, about swearing versus slurs, specifically racial slurs, and why a slur is not a swear. It has a different intention, and it is a much more sort of awful thing to do. But you had also a fascinating section within that about some groups have tried to sort of reappropriate the derogatory word. A good example of that is queer. Where that has, for many people who are within those communities, they reappropriated. The N-word is a different story entirely, because although a lot of rap stars may freely use that word, there's an awful lot of people of color who are really offended by that word still, Oprah being one of them.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I mean, they are, so swearing and slurs are both obviously forms of offensive language, but they're offensive for different reasons. So slurs are words that, when you use them, you signal contempt to an entire group of people. So, you know, you mentioned the N-word. If you use that word, and you're not black, then by using it, you know, especially if you're sort of using it in a sort of derogatory way, I mean, I guess by definition, pretty much it is derogatory.
Yeah.
Then you know, you're expressing a contemptuous attitude to all black people, and that means that there's no context in which you can use that word inoffensively, whereas with swearing there is. You know, there's sort of informal context where we can, you know, sort of talk in a relaxed way, and we might use swearing in a way that the people around us recognize is benign. But you don't get that with slurs. There's this interesting distinction between two different forms of offense that that comes from the American legal philosopher Joel Feinberg. So he points out that, you know, when we're talking about being offended just in everyday life, there's two different things that we might mean. One is simply, it might mean I feel offended. And we can feel offended by things that, you know, aren't actually offensive. So, you know, somebody might feel offended by a female priest or by gay relationships, say. And, you know, in those cases, we can say, well, yeah, you shouldn't feel offended by that. There's nothing wrong with it. So there's that sense in which offense just means, just talks about how somebody feels. And there is another sense of it which means that, you know, if something is offensive, then it is genuinely morally wrong. And I think, you know, you can use swearing. I think a lot of the time with swearing, when we cause people to feel offended by it, we're not actually doing something wrong, usually. We're just causing people to feel a certain way, to feel offended. But with slurs, it's almost the other way around, that you know, if you're using a slur, so, you know, slurs are words that sort of denigrate an entire group of people. And if you are not a member of that group of people, and typically if you use the slur, then you are sort of expressing a contemptuous attitude to people in that group. And, you know, you can possibly do that in a way that doesn't cause anyone to be offended. So, you know, you might be kind of sitting in a basement with a group of sort of far-right people freely using a load of slurs, and nobody actually feels offended. But nevertheless, there's a sense in which you are doing something offensive because you're speaking with contempt about groups of people who it's not appropriate to be contemptuous of. And you don't get that with swearing. You know, there's no sort of context, I think, where you could say, well, you're swearing in a context where nobody actually feels offended, but actually you are doing something offensive. So I think, you know, this kind of brings out an important distinction between swearing and slurs, which is that, you know, slurring is a more serious matter.
Yep, ethically. Absolutely. We're almost out of time, but I think one of the wildest things you discuss, and for me, this is the brilliance of your book, is you take some very obvious things that people just don't think about and then analyze it and sort of get deep into the weeds. There are words that mean the exact same thing that the swears do, but nobody's offended them by them in the same way. For instance, vagina, penis, sexual congress,
yeah.
Feces, urine. All those are words you could use in many contexts, although there always are going to be people who are offended by certain words, but those are not considered swears. And the weirdest thing is, how does that evolve? That there's a different word for vagina or penis or sexual congress, that becomes a swear and those don't.
Yeah. And this illustrates that it's not, you know, that if you want to sort of find out or work out what's behind what gives swear words their capacity to offend, the answer is not, or it can't be, because they're referring to these sort of taboo.
Right, it's not. There's something else there that's going on.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it tends to be the case with all taboos, you know, anything that we're not allowed to talk about, there's sort of polite ways to refer to it, you know, where you sort of say, I'm going to the bathroom instead of, you know,
I'm going to go take a crap. Oh, Rebecca, we're completely out of time. My guest tonight has been Rebecca Roche. We could talk about this book for a long time. Every chapter has got so many interesting points made in it. She's the senior lecturer in philosophy at the Royal Holloway University, London. And we've been talking about her new book. Trust me, it's a serious investigation. For F's sake, why swearing is shocking, rude, and fun. Rebecca, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much. It's been great talking to you, and thanks for your great questions.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.